Yes, Motorsport 101 is proud to announce our new partnership with Amazon Web Services. And our friends at AWS has let us know through our their various resources that this is, in fact, by all statistical measures, the most recent episode of Motorsport 101.
This is why we never let King do the intro. Hey guys, your friendly neighborhood host, Drake Harrison, back at it once again with episode 256 of Motorsport 101. Hopefully you're not sick of my hair yet. With me, as always, is Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Hello. Glad to be here. Our friends at AWS has let me know that this was the most optimal time to record a podcast today. I'm glad.
Oh no, like, this is the most optimal time to record. We originally meant to record this an hour and a half ago, but due to technical hiccups, we're only just doing it now.
Yeah, I ignored our overlords. We were smited mightily.
Yeah, my computer is a pile of junk by modern day standards. Great! Hence why my video's been letting the team down somewhat. Apologies for that, but hopefully I will beat Adam Johnson into submission so we can get a new PC built at some point. Thanks, Adam. Also with me is RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon. Our new partners at AWS have let me know that within the top 10 fastest drivers to have ever raced in Formula One is a driver in the GT500 class of Super GT. And that means that my favorite series, my precious darling, can make a claim to being as good as Formula One. This is not satire, by the way. You should go watch it this weekend.
Yep.
And that's all we're going to talk about this AWS driver rankings thing.
Yeah, like the only joke I had in the original recording of this episode was that I find it amazing that Tony Fernandez was so far ahead of the game at Lotus when he picked up the team that he ended up hiring the 8th and 9th fastest drivers of all time without even realizing it. Yep. So meta.
I'm pretty sure our all-time lists are way better than anything AWS had come up with, and the fact that we've not done it once, but twice.
That's true. I think they just wanted to go with something that's just like, right, Senna, Schumacher, or Hamilton, if they're at the top, who cares about the rest?
Whatever happens, about right, right? Happens.
Yeah, it's about right.
So what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, I don't exaggerate when I say this. We've done 256 episodes of this show. This is the thinnest F1 section for a set list we have ever had. I've done about 245 of these episodes, and the F1's always been the backbone of our series. There is 2 bullet points for the entire race, and we had to stretch to get to 2. This really was a nothing burger of a Grand Prix with extra cheese. I'll literally read out the set list to you for your entertainment pleasure. Quote, Lewis Hamilton wins race number 88 and breaks Michael Schumacher's podium record for Verstappen second, Bottas third, ... Oh, and Ferrari shit in the bed again. That's it. That's literally it. So even us will probably not find a way to go an hour and a half on this one. And if we do, I will literally jump out of this window right next to me. We will also talk about the Genius series.
I'll keep that written down.
I'll be impressed even by our standards if we pull that one off. And we'll catch up on a little bit of the news, new ownership at Williams, the Concorde Agreement, and a little bit of update to MotoGP in quote-unquote Styria this weekend. Rather than Austria, you know, even though they're still calling it the Austrian Grand Prix. Way to go, MotoGP social media department. I know you're listening,
though. Oh my god!
He's our friend. He'll see the funny side in it. In the meantime, basically, you can find us real quick. If you're on YouTube watching this, hi. Feel free to subscribe and hit the bell if you want to see all our updates and some video highlights as well to come off these shows. If you can't be bothered to sit down and watch the whole version, which is understandable. We do like to go along here. If you're listening to the audio version, we're on youtube.com/motorsport101. Check us out there if you want to see all our faces. You probably don't, especially mine. I've got like a hedge in my hair. It's not great. In the meantime, we're also on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you want to find out my personal handles, they are in our boxes below if you're watching on YouTube. And if not, we're at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. Sadly, Cam isn't here. He's running errands this week, so there's only three of us in the box rather than the usual four.
There's an empty box below me. Oh, my Lord. I wonder what I'm going to put in the box.
The power of editing, you know, we'll find out later. It'll be a surprise for all of us. we'll figure that out later. But in the meantime, if you're really, really lucky, so you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes on audio before they go out to the listening public. And if you're really lucky, so you can back us at the $10 level. That gets us in a supporters club of our Discord server where you can watch and listen to these shows live as they're being recorded, as well as early access to the full video versions of these shows as well, at least 24 hours before they go live to the public. Hurrah! All that fun stuff, all the details, and a lot more, and written pieces as well, all on our website, motorsport101.com. So, let's get in to the Spanish Grand Prix. And, oh boy, fellas. captivating this one, wasn't it?
Riveting. Pulse-pounding. Exciting.
All of those things was the MotoGP races at Austria last week. It was not for the Spanish Grand Prix, unfortunately. This was... I'll cut to the chase. This was a 3 out of 10 Andre scale of race rating awesomeness. This was about as low as I normally get without a race literally pissing me off like Canada did last year. The start happened. Hamilton won. And you know it's not a good sign when Lewis Hamilton won so comfortably he literally did not know the race was over. I'm not making this up. He literally, like, he said, was that the last lap, guys? He wasn't even paying attention. He won by 24 seconds over Max Verstappen. And we were sitting here at the start, I think it was the first 10 laps, right, where we were sitting here going, oh, Verstappen's up in the grill again of Lewis. He's staying with him. We might get another tyre war like we got last week. We all know Spain is, you know, very harsh on tyres traditionally. Nope. Hamilton did what he did in Singapore a couple of years ago. Remember when he was playing possum? And he just turned up the switch, started setting fastest laps, and then the race was over? Yeah. that's what happened. That's literally what happened. And that was like the lead battle over right there and then. Like, genuinely, one of the highlights of the race, King, was Max Verstappen getting a 1.9-second stop in the garage. Because, yeah, we love fast pit stops around here.
Oh, Lord. So you're telling me the midfield wasn't here to liberate us from the struggles up front?
Not really.
Oh, God.
Like, I literally said in my tweet summing up the race, we got a very cool early move when Daniil Kvyat went around the outside of Daniel Ricciardo into turn four. That might have been about it, besides the good old-fashioned DRS train that we got from last week, only extrapolated over most of the Grand Prix, where no one could really overtake each other because everybody had DRS off each other. And that was about it. Like, normally, even in, like, when F1's at its worst, it will still be liberated via decent midfield action. I don't think we even got that this time round. It was just... Like, we had Charles Leclerc trying to pass Lando Norris, and that was about it.
I think the most pressing thing for me coming out of this weekend is how few people really understand the cooperation needed to complete a round of Seesaw in Fall Guys Olympic Knockout. Because it is clear that most of these folks are just in it for themselves. They want to get to the finish line first, and therefore they don't know how a seesaw works. And this goes back to kids maybe not knowing how to plan a seesaw to playground because recess hours have been cut so much. But that is another topic for another day. Anyway, about that race, it's shit.
I wish I had more to tell you, but like honestly, me trying to play seesaw on stream earlier this week on Twitch, trying to play Five Guys was literally four guys. See, you tell I'm hungry. I've got burgers on the brain. Oof. It's not good. that really was about it. I wish we had more to say, but we just don't. The lead battle was Hamilton taking off into the distance. They had the pace measure. I was telling people on Twitter, you really think Mercs are going to let themselves get beaten the same way twice? Yeah. It's not going to happen. That's their one screw-up for the year, and they still finish second and third. This is it, fellas. This is honestly it. And, you know, it was a carbon copy to some of the races we had earlier when it came to results. Max had enough pace to split the Mercedes. They tried running Bottas on a one-stopper to maybe try and beat Max. Didn't work. Mercs had to throw in the towel with about 12 to go at the end. So Mercs took a pretty safe 1-3 in the end. Fun fact, they were the only three dudes on the lead lap by the time we came over the line 66 laps later. This was an almighty clobbering and a pretty prompt reminder to the field that there's only three dudes that are capable of winning a Grand Prix right now, and the other two of the three are outside bets at the moment, and that's Hamilton just curb stomped everybody. 24 second win over Max, who we know is driving out of his skin to even split these Mercs up on a regular basis. God help me.
This is the Formula One World Championship. There has to be storylines. There's always, the racing might be bad sometimes, but there's always something to talk about, right? Right? We had something to talk about, right?
Yeah.
King?
We have a couple things.
Hang on. Sorry to cut you, RJ. King, do you know what the odds are on Lewis Hamilton to win the World Championship right now?
Is it a straight up 1-1? I wouldn't be surprised if we're like, hey, Lewis is just going to win, y'all.
1-50. 1-50. For those guys that don't know your gambling odds at home, that means you'd have to risk 50 quid to win one. That's how the bookies are basically saying, we're not taking bets on this anymore. Forget about it. There's no value here. They think it's already over.
I mean, they're not wrong,
and it is now.
In bookies' language, 1-50 means the bookies think there's a 98% chance Lewis Hamilton wins the championship now. Oof. I don't think he's wrong. I don't think they're wrong, but they think it's dead. It's DOA on arrival, and that's the end of the matter, basically. There was only one other prominent major story that came out of this race that is even worth discussing, really, and that was the unfortunate and very dangerous, inevitably, retirement of Charles Leclerc. He was running, I want to say, P6 at the time, when I think it was his axle. I think it was an axle issue with an electrical problem with Charles's car. He'd spun around at the final chicane. The car had shut itself off, electrically speaking. Charles was trying to restart it on the side of the road. Couldn't do it. They were about to throw in the towel and retire the car. Charles had already taken his harness off. Remember this, it becomes very important in a second. He'd already taken his harness off. He tried, apparently, one last go to try and turn the engine back on, or power unit back on, I should say. And miraculously, it turned itself back on. So the car was technically working, although, you know, coughing and spluttering on its electrical unit. So Charles hops back in the car and continues, even though he's now not wearing his seatbelt.
It should be clear. He was technically wearing the seatbelts, though you can't pull yourself into a Formula One car. You don't have the leverage to tighten your own seatbelt.
Right. And it wasn't for another couple of laps of Leclerc touring the circuit at a snail's pace before Ferrari finally, you know, put the car out of its misery by boxing it and retiring the car. Now, what's funny is that Formula One, as a social media entity, has fully acknowledged this incident. It was, the onboards were all over Formula One's website after in the day after it happened. Charles wrote a tweet about the situation, which he then promptly deleted, which I thought was quite funny, because he pretty much had openly admitted he had driven the car with a loose seatbelt. This was unbelievably dangerous. I find it amazing there's no formal investigation that's taken place regarding this, because it's all out there. We all saw it. We all know exactly what happened.
Like, what I see is the damning part. I would understand if there was an investigation, if he had driven the car right back to pit lane and got his seatbelts tightened. I would understand that, because there's no way for him to get from point A to point B without, you know, without someone else being able to get to him to tighten the seatbelts. That's understandable. But the fact he did multiple laps, that's the problem.
Yeah, two laps. Yeah, did two laps of a loose seatbelt. If someone collides with him at speed, goodness only knows what could have potentially happened there.
Yeah, just like as a brief explainer, even if you have the belts on and you try to tighten it yourself, you're not really strapped in. A second person has to be on the outside because they have better levers than you to really strap you into the car. Because if you just tighten it yourself, you could still move around in the cockpit. You're not as secure to the car as you should be. Meaning that if you have an accident, your body isn't going to just slow down along with the car. There's inertia there. Your body's going to move.
Yeah, and I don't think an explainer is needed as to how catastrophic that could potentially be in 200 mile an hour Formula One cars. Bad idea. Very, very bad idea. Again, I find it amazing that there's been no formal investigation that's been carried out since this happened. I find that mind-boggling that everyone just seemed to have just brushed it under the carpet like it's not happened. Normally, Formula One is very prompt on things like that. Normally, within the hour, you'd be getting stewards' note panels being sent to the media department. And on this case, crickets. Nothing. I do not understand how Charles has gotten away with that one, even more so when he basically admitted it on social media the next day and then had to go delete his tweets because he realized, yeah, I've kind of done goofed on this one.
I was about to say, and forgive me for being the mediocre dude that just plays devil's advocate all the time, but do you think this might be an actual case of that Ferrari International assistance that everybody talks about in jest?
Get out.
No, because I don't believe entertaining that here. I think that's just...
I think it's a situation where, like, again, like, if you really tried to argue from the standpoint of Ferrari International assistance, per se, it's that situation of kind of trying to decide what penalty to apply to this. Is it going to be a race time penalty administered post-race? Is it going to be a fine? Which I think it should be a fine, but I don't know if the other teams want it to be a fine. I think it's when you're in that gray area where there being little to no precedent on what to do, a lot of times, like, the stewards are just like, bah.
Oh, yeah, like, to be fair, like, when I first heard about this, I thought, oh, his seatbelts were off, and I'm thinking, like, surely the reason why there's no precedent is because they never foresaw a scenario in the year of our Lord 2020 where somebody would be driving at speed without a seatbelt on.
Yeah, it's in the regulations as being against the rules, but it doesn't expand on what a penalty should be for that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Because if you are you saying that Ferrari might have accidentally found another loophole in all of this?
Oh,
I have a feeling this one's gonna shut soon. But I mean, Ferrari's a mess. Vettel and his team are having a public divorce that everybody can hear on the radio.
McLaren's
driving with the seatbelts on tight. And Lewis Hamilton has more podiums than anybody ever in the history of Formula One.
156. I just... What is there to say about Hamilton that hasn't already been said? I mean, he is going to break every statistical record in the book this season. By the way this is going, he's probably going to win double digits again. He's probably going to have like at least 15 podiums again. You know, like Schumacher's win record might go the round after Mugello. He's up to 88 now. He's only three behind Schumacher's 91. We are probably witnessing the greatest statistical driver this sport's ever seen. And he's basically winning with one hand on the dash. And, making it look so, so easy when we all know it isn't. But this is just, again, it's just unbelievable stuff from Lewis. Again, there's not much to even say on this. It's just Hamilton. He's just that good.
Yeah.
There's nothing more to say. He's just... It's nothing we haven't already said. It's just ridiculous stuff. And the Mercs is just... They've turned it into 2014 again. No one else is even in their ballpark. The only thing that's... The only even minor chink in their armour is a freakish load-bearing tyre weakness and Valtteri Bottas. And that's about it. And even then, Bottas does what he needs to do, and that's just rack up decent points. Verstappen might split them by the end of the year, but the margin of error is so much bigger for Red Bull than it is compared to Mercedes right now. Let's run down the results and let's get into a little bit of some of the minor stories we can get into in this race. Lewis Hamilton winning in the end. Max Verstappen, as mentioned, 24 seconds behind him. 44 seconds back, Valtteri Bottas, as mentioned, had to take a late stop at the end but did set fastest lap. It was the only reason why Hamilton didn't get a Grand Slam. Way to go, Valtteri. Lay them mind games on him. So he gets 16 points rather than 15 for the fastest lap bonus. Lance Stroll, fourth again. Yay for racing points. Good to see. And he had to beat his teammate as well there, because Perez was coming after him on that one stopper a little bit, and Lance had to hold him off, which was quite a nice touch. Another positive reason to believe in Lance. A great performance, one of his best in F1 today, all round. Very, very strong indeed. So good for Lance and good for Canada. Sergio Perez in fifth, despite a 5-second time penalty. Funnily enough, he did actually finish fourth on the road, but ended up dropping to fifth because he had a 5-second time penalty for ignoring blue flags. Apparently, according to the Formula One subreddit, there was video footage of him ignoring at least six or seven to let Hamilton by. So, yeah, not really a leg to stand on for Checo on that one. That was just plain ignorance. Tough luck, son. Not that it really matters, given the team brought home the exact same number of points either way, but...
Yeah, team's not fussed, and hey, Checo's back to racing and is in good health, which is good to see.
Good to see. Bring back Nico! The fangirls demand it. In sixth, Carlos Sainz, a very quiet day from him, but a solid sixth place for him in the McLaren car. Needed that one after a lot of rumblings about his ability. Lando Norris has captivated a lot of people again. And if you see the head-to-heads, I believe Norris is 4-2 up this season in qualifying and in the race so far this season. So good for Carlos to try and plug that deficit in. Now, let's talk a little bit about Sebastian Vettel in 7th. Funnily enough, he actually won driver of the day in the end. He started 11th. He missed out on a Q3 spot by 0.02 of a second. The length of a CD cover over the line. I think the official F1 account worked it out at 7 centimetres, separating him and Lando Norris from a spot in Q3. And Alex Albon was another 3,000 up the road in 9th. That's how close it was. But everybody in the Vettel camp was kind of optimistic. Free tire choice from 11th place. They put him on the medium compound tire, to what seemed like an obvious one-stop strategy. Everybody kind of worked out by halfway through that the hard tire was not a race tire to run. So they put Sebastian on softs. I think it was after something like 19 laps or so, because I think they were going to put both Ferraris on a one-stopper, but obviously on the inverse, because Leclerc started the race on softs, Vettel on mediums. Now, I don't want to make a joke here. It's almost like Ferrari didn't know what was going on after Leclerc's car had to be pulled into a retirement. But we all heard the radio. They put Vettel on the soft tyre. Vettel tells the team, you know, are we going to the end on this tyre? His team says, no, push hard. He does 3 push laps. And then they get on the radio again, and then they ask him, how do you feel about going to the end of the race on this tyre? And Vettel immediately goes, oh, for fuck's sake. I just told you about this like 3 laps ago. And I'm not exaggerating when I say this, fellas, right? Tell me, correct me if I'm wrong. He's literally telling him, but he's literally telling the engineers, what pace I'm going at now, and what do I need to set to make this tyre go to the end of the race? Like, yeah. Ferrari... go on, King.
Yeah, like a very straightforward, you know, ass of a team to just check for you. Just like, hey, like, you guys have, obviously, it's your job to monitor my race. I just, you know, just so you guys are sure, here's the pace that I'm running right now. What kind of pace do I need to make it to the end? Can y'all guys do that for me?
Crickets in the Ferrari camp. They didn't have a clue. They had to get back to him a lap later before he'd figured out, okay, let's go at this pace to get to the end. And Vettel was like, fuck it, we've got nothing to lose. We might as well go for it on the one stopper. I want to say he did something like 39 laps on a used set of soft tires.
Yeah, my intuition is telling me that Ferrari never game planned that strategy, that they just assumed and committed to Sebastian having to stop again. So
what an efficient and healthy and well-run organization they are.
According to Jason in the chat, he says a lot of the Ferrari crew apparently left the moment Leclerc retired.
Well run, well organized.
What is this team?
Best.
What is this team?
We could be asking that pretty much every single episode as a recurring segment. Though, until they inevitably win their one token race, and that's looking at like...
Though I'll take that with a grain of salt, because, like, where would they leave to? Where are they going? Like,
they're packing their preppery, as my mom would say. I don't even know. Like, honestly, this team is a hot mess. And then Binotto, after the race, is talking about, you know, in sort of like half-hearted terms, almost implying that they're not taking care of Seb because, you know, quote, he's leaving the team at the end of the year. And I'm like, that was your decision. You chose to sack him over the off-season. You already knew that you were going to sign Carlos Sainz. It was already a known secret by McLaren by December. We said it before, Zak Brown gave Carlos Sainz permission to talk to them in December. Like, so McLaren already knew what was going to happen. So this is not a secret. Like, you've already had to admit you've lied to the press about how you handled your driver situation. And now you're talking about how Vettel's part of the problem here. No, you didn't think he was worth keeping. You made your bed. Now lay in it, as far as I'm concerned. If you want to neglect one of your cars, you are objectively bad at your job. It's as simple as that. And yeah, at least the fans got to see that. You know, it is kind of funny that after all these years of not giving Sebastian Vettel the benefit of the doubt as a driver, they finally are when they realize just how trash Ferrari are at organizing themselves as a team. And yeah, he won driver of the day. So, you know, he actually beat Verstappen, the people's champion of Formula One driver of the day polls, to get there. So
unbelievable,
hey, good
Jeff.
For him. Good for him. Yeah, so yeah, seventh place for Sebastian in the end. By all accounts, he put in a shift, and it was rewarded, at least by the fans watching. I love that it was, I think it was the Dutch media that told him that, he was driver of the day, and he actually cracked a smile underneath his mask, which was a nice touch. Yet more comments from, I think, Lewis Hamilton as well, saying that he really should go join Racing Point.
Oh, Lord.
Quote, They're not letting their man shine at Ferrari, and I was just like, wow, even Hamilton's dunking on this team. Normally the docile, I only spin the pot when Nico Rosberg's involved. Hamilton is making sassy comments. So yeah, that wraps that one up. So yeah, Vettel 7th in the end. Alex Albon 8th, 40 plus seconds behind his teammate again. Sigh. I worry for Alex, I really do. I like the fact that the team are openly acknowledging they need to do more by Alex, but Red Bull hasn't done enough for me to believe him on that one. But hey, low-key, driver of the year contender, Pierre Gasly, 9th, again, in the points for AlphaTauri.
Pierre's good shit, awesome. Yo. Pierre is, if Red Bull really... If they could have done it this year where they could just mix and match Alex and Pierre in that second seed at any point, I feel like that's what they would have been doing, honestly, this whole time.
Since rejoining that team, Pierre Gasly has been in the points 8 out of the 15 races since going back to what was formerly Toro Rosso, now AlphaTauri, and including that second place at Brazil. Gasly is putting together a hell of a season, low-key, seriously doing great work in an AlphaTauri that is not, on paper, a particularly great car. So shout-out to him, he's doing a great job in life. Ahead of Lando Norris, on the road, very impressive stuff indeed. Lando rounding off the points in 10th, Danny Ric in 11th, in the Renault, not such a good day for them this time around. Danny Kvyat 12th, Esteban Ocon, P13, Kimi Raikkonen 14th, Kevin Magnussen 15th, Gio 16th, George Russell ahead of Nicholas Latifi over the line, 17th and 18th, Romain Grosjean in 19th, who had a couple of gravel-based excursions, shall we say, over the course of the race. And as, crazily enough, Charles Leclerc, the only retirement in the entire Grand Prix, believe it or not. Also, Kvyat also had a 5-second time penalty for ignoring blue flags. Didn't affect his position. So, championship standings as we go. Lewis Hamilton of 132 points. He has a 37-point lead now on Max Verstappen in second. Valtteri Bottas third on 89. Charles Leclerc fourth on 45. Lance Stroll into the top five on the front page of the Wikipedia articles now. He's on 40 points. Good for him. Constructors, Merckx 221, Red Bull 135. Not much more needs to be said. it's already, like, Merckx have already nearly got two races in hand. I think they actually do have two races in hand, actually. 46, not quite, but nearly two races in hand already. Racing Point back up to third now. It's actually very close for third. Racing Point have 63 points post-penalty. McLaren have 62 and Ferrari have 61. It's almost intriguing in the battle for the bronze at the moment. Mm. Who'd have thought it? Racing Point would be a comfortable third right now if it wasn't for that 15-point deduction. Which, by the way, Renault, of course, lodged an appeal against Racing Point's brake ducts. Once again, reprimanded. More on that soon. Maybe. We'll have to wait and see. Junior Series, boys. And
finally, some good fucking food. Now, we need to talk about this feature race and specifically how these last handful of laps unfolded.
My God. It was looking like a relatively tame Formula 2 sort of strategic race where the guys on the alternate strategy were going to come up through the field towards the end. Callum Ilott was looking like he was going to win it. Given he had to stop early and then make his way back up on the harder compound tyre. Until... We had a late safety car.
Late on safety car, which then leads to Nobuhiro Matsushita coming in and jumping the queue immensely.
didn't Nobu come in the same lap the safety car came out, so he basically lost virtually no time?
Yep.
Yes, he did.
And that pretty much put him to the front of the queue. Yeah, it put him to the front of the queue on a brand new set of tyres. I still thought that Kyle Mylott would find a way to get back to the front because he stopped when the safety car came out. A lap later, he dropped himself down to third. He gave up track position to do it. But I thought, it's been the fastest car pretty much all weekend. He's in third. He'll be fine. And turns out Callum kind of botched not one, but both safety car restarts we ended up having on the day. He was caught out by other cars around him in the field. And he would suffer for it, which we'll get to. Because there was a second safety car as well right at the end. I'll get to that in a minute because it was quite funny. Because I think it was Roy Nissany who came off around the outside of turn three. And I was thinking, race is over because Formula 2 has a 1 hour time limit for their Grand Prix. We'd already had the one safety car. You know, it's a sign when the media department switch it from the lap graphic to the time graphic because they know they're not going to get all the laps in. That was
They were also getting all their winter fun facts in. Like we had Alex Jakes mention, hey. Every Formula 2 Spanish feature race winner so far has gone on to graduate to Formula 1 at the end of the season.
Yeah. Somehow I'm not sure Prince Nobu's going to get there on that one somehow, but... bless him, we love Alex Jakes on this show for this very reason. Optimism that the race was about to end. Turns out, Marshall did a really good job of getting Nissany's car off the track quickly because he'd gone off right by the slip road. So there was only about 4.5 minutes left when that safety car, the second safety car, came out, and they were able to clear it just in time so he had one more sprint lap right at the very end. It was a one-lap sprint finish. And Matsushita took off and was able to survive. Schwartzman held on for second on a brand new set of tyres. But absolute chaos on the last lap. I think Callum dropped to fourth, I want to say.
Yeah, because we had two groups of cars. A front group with worn out tyres, a back group with fresh tyres who never got the chance to use it. Now they have one lap to try to get as many positions as possible. Let's see what happens.
And the man who's cork in the bottle on an old set of hard tyres, hello, Yuki Tsunoda.
That was crazy. Yuki Tsunoda was right in there on the bottleneck, and we heard him on the radio during the first safety car. They told Yuki, stay out. We're going to try and win this thing. And I was like, I love your ambitions, fellas. Like, really. But they weren't quite able to pull that off. But they were able to finish in third. It was just off the podium in the end. Because, again, we had absolute chaos at the end with new runners. And, again, on new tyres. We had guys on old tyres. It was absolute carnage. In the end, I want to say it was... Who came over the line in third?
On the road, Nikita Mazepin had done enough to take third place. He had a brilliant race with a beautiful pass with two wheels on the grass going into the first quarter. But Mazepin took a five-second time penalty for ignoring track limits one too many times. He doesn't even get in the points. Guan Yu Zhou moves up to third place ahead of Yuki Tsunoda in fourth, and Callum Mylott finishes fifth.
Yeah, Mazepin would finish down in 13th, the nature of a five-second time penalty after a safety car. Not the first time we've mentioned that this year. Absolutely crippling for Mazepin's race. dropped him from a podium finish to out of the points altogether. So yeah, it was Matsushita in the end ahead of Schwartzman and Joe on the podium. Tsunoda just missing out with his last lap tire gambit, and only about a tenth ahead of Kanemilov, who was raging by the time they got to the finish line. Kanem is a bit of a meme on the internet for either bad luck or funny quotes, and this was neither. So he was ahead of Mick Schumacher, Felipe Drugovic, Luca Giotto, Dan Ticktum, or a Dick Tantrum, depending on which F1 pundit you tend to be these days. And Louis Delatraz rounding off the points in 10th. A bit of sad news that came as a result of this race, though. We didn't see it at the time until after the checkered flag had come out. Sean Gallail had taken a nasty back injury after hitting a sausage curb on the back end of the track. Why do we still have sausage curbs? For the love of God.
Yeah, well, what had happened was... Gallail came into contact with Jack Aiken. Sean's car went airborne, but not like, you know, just lifted the wheels off the ground. And the car landed on the curb itself.
Oh, no. Ah, that is painful. That was a nasty, nasty incident. We didn't see it in real time on the camera, but they had to forcibly remove Gallail from his car due to the injury. Thankfully, he's relatively okay, but he is going to be out of action for the next 6 weeks as a direct result of that injury. So get well soon, Sean Gallail. We do like Gallail in this camp. He's a chicken adopting son. Is a fun time. And as Rezzy puts in the chat, and I've run out of chat as recorded on Discord, Sean doesn't need this. No one needs this. Get well soon, Sean. And his replacement will be the exciting talent Yuri Vips for the next... for the next handful of rounds. So good luck to him in that car. Yeah. Big shoes to
fill. Gotta love it when a plan falls through.
Oh, man. Though, Vips getting to be Sean Gallail's replacement means we get a head-to-head matchup between Dan Ticktum and his former academy.
That's gonna be delicious.
It's like sweet KFC. Sprint race, and Felipe Drugovic, once again, from the front in the sprint race, would take a dominant win in the end, a 9.5-second victory in the end over Luca Giotto, and Mick on the podium again, Mick in third place for Prima, ahead of Yuki Tsunoda, Matsushita in fifth, Mazepin 6th. Pedro Piquet up in the points in 7th. Good for him. Kanemilov struggled to make real progress in the Virtuosi car in 8th. Delatraz and Ticktum 10th in the end. Bit of a stinker, that one, in terms of pure on-track action. But hey, yeah, they can't all be winners in Formula 2. Drugovic wins in the end. Championship standings in Formula 2 after all of that, which, oh, by the way, in case you didn't notice, MP Motorsport did what they have never done before. They swept the weekend.
That's incredible. Did you know that they have never finished better than 6th in the team's championship at any point in their F2 history?
They just swept a round. A whole round. Wow. Way to go, MP Motorsport, by the way. Kanemilov still has an 18-point lead in the championship over Robert Schwartzman, 121-103. Lingard still clinging on to second with 87 points. Yuki Tsunoda looking good to get that super license all dialed in with 82 points now in fourth. Mick Schumacher fifth on 79. Wanyu Zhou on 76. Nikita Mazepin on 75. Felipe Drugovic on 67. Louis Delatraz putting together a nice solid year with 65 points. And my notes here says Devon Butler with 63 points. I can only assume that's Dan Ticktum.
Yeah.
Good shout. way to go, RJ. You're not wrong there either. Formula 3, and this was an interesting one. Jake Hughes, everybody, taking command in the Formula 3 race 1. Dedicating the win to his beloved friend, Mr. Antoine Hubert. So salute to the veteran of the field in Hughesy for bringing home a solid win there in race one ahead of Pironi and Nannini rounding off.
That was Lawson. Lawson. Was,
oh, sorry, wrong
so
race.
So the race one, Liam Lawson and Logan Sargeant had a pretty good fight for second place. Lawson tried to get him around him a few times, and on his third attempt, finally got the move done.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, and yeah, Hughes won pretty comfortably from there. Lawson second, Logan Sargent third on that one. Where's all your American guys at now, huh?
I'm still on the podium.
Yeah.
Cricket. Joe Roberts let you down. Look how quiet you guys all are now, huh? I see you. Race two. Shout out to Oscar Piastri, who actually managed to rekindle his romance with his DRS rear wing. And would win in race two ahead of Pironi and Nannini on the podium in second and third. So good.
Did you
for
see
them,
that start from Oscar, though? Because he started fifth, and by the time we got to sector two, he was already up in the lead. He made up like four places in as many corners.
Rampant.
And he didn't need DRS to do that.
No, keep the missus quiet for a weekend, clearly. And it worked, amazingly. Who would have thought it? Championship standings in Formula 3, by the way. Logan Sargent still in the lead of the championship by a single point over Mrs. Piastri's rear wing on 130 points. Lawson third on 99. Beckman on 94.5. Pouchet, happy birthday, by the way, the other day. He turned 17. May the good Lord help us all. How disgustingly young he is. On 80. Vesti on 70.5. Hughes on 63.5. Pironi 58. Verschuur 57. And Novalak 45. In the Formula 3 standings. Thank God I don't have to talk about Spain anymore, because just watch the Junior Series highlights on YouTube. You don't need to see the main race. There was literally nothing of worth to keep an eye on there. A couple of bits of news before we round off on this one. Everyone has signed the new Concorde Agreement. Hooray!
Yeah, we're all back together as one happy family for the next 5 years.
Yes, because there were some doubts, because originally, the deadline was last week on my birthday, August 12th, but...
Shameless.
There was some tension between Mercedes and Formula One management, and it seemed like, hey, maybe Mercedes won't make the early deadline. And then it was announced that there was an extension to the deadline to this past Wednesday, and... apparently, through negotiations, things were ironed out. What was ironed out? I don't know, because the Concorde Agreement's secret. And it's different for a different team. So maybe Mercedes got a sweetheart deal. Don't know, because again, everything is confidential.
Right. Again, I still find it funny, just this morning as an example, Matteo Binotto from Ferrari was calling for clarity on the issue with racing points and their brake ducts. That's so cute.
Because, like, I wish, like, we knew what the agreements were, but again, confidential. It's not like other sports where, like, the players have to know, and the players are probably going to tell the media, so...
Yeah, allegedly Ferrari's veto powers aren't as strong, and allegedly their participation trophy has been cut in half, but we don't know for sure. Take it with a grain of salt. But yes.
We just know that all the teams are going to be around for the next 5 years.
Yay! Thank God. Especially Williams, because we worried about them, because there's news of them as well. This came through this morning as we're recording this, actually, that somebody's bought them. They've been sold to a private investment firm in the United States.
Hey, you know a little bit about this investment firm. They're right up the road from you.
Yeah, that's pretty much everything I know about them. That they're...
Davis! Great!
I don't even know how to pronounce their name. I'm just going to assume it's Darilton Capital. I assume they're the Darilton of the Dorito Daryltons. I'm making that up, obviously.
I'm sure you were. But, I'll be concerned if you weren't, but yeah. They bought the team for 133 million quid, or as I like to call it, one Felipe Coutinho. Roughly.
That's like half a Giancarlo Stanton.
God. As a third of a Mike Trout. which is just terrifying. But yeah, like you said, they've been bought up by an American private investment firm. Fingers crossed they'll be long-term injecting them with some money to keep the things afloat, but it is also kind of a sad time because it's also the end of the last family-owned team in the sport. But it had to be done. You know, Williams had been struggling for a little while. They'd always complained during the hybrid era that the extra moving parts were super expensive, and it's been a slow and steady decline for them, and hopefully this is a positive influence. Hopefully these new owners don't, you know, get too invasive, shall we say, pardon me. But we'll have to just keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best when that's concerned. Again, best wishes to all the guys at Williams. I know they've had it rough. There's Absolutely. Been already a lot of guys who've lost their jobs, and, you know, again, it's not been ideal to say the least, but fingers crossed this is the sign of a positive uptick for the sport's great independence.
Continuing on that, Williams, despite new ownership, despite new American ownership, second American team, yes, they'll still retain what we know. Team will still have the same name, same branding, everything. Besides that, we don't know. And I think it's also important to know that that Williams is a publicly traded team, that they do have shares on a stock market, and the announcement of being purchased meant their stock price has gone up a lot. So, being bought out by an investment firm, hey, maybe they're gonna try to push Williams' being sustainable for, quote, long-term growth, whatever that means to this firm.
I would certainly hope so. I really do, because I know a lot of people are potentially worried about this investment group. You know, hey, they'll come in with bold ideas, but we still want to keep everything the same. And then eventually they get more of their fingerprints on the team, and sometimes that's to their detriment.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't say that this exact moment is a big change for Williams. This is just the sign that change is coming for Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's hoping it's change for the good. We have to wait and see of as that goes on. Right, so one more little bit of news, a couple of little bits of news as well, regarding the calendar. There is strong talk that we are going back to Istanbul Park later in the year, probably around November sort of time. Wowee, the car park is being dusted off, ladies and gentlemen. What do we make of Istanbul Park potentially coming back?
It's
interesting for a circuit that hasn't seen top flight international racing in ages. Obviously, people have some sort of fondness for Turkey. I personally don't. It's just, you know, another track to me. But I can see why, like, this gets a lot of people excited.
Yeah, because this has the knack of being one of the best modern, state-of-the-art circuits that Herman Tilke has originally designed. But we haven't seen them race here in 9 years. If you're worried about F1 going to places where there are egregious human rights violations, Turkey may be not one of those places, but the racing should still be entertaining, and if not, hey, it'll be fun to see a contemporary F1 car do hot laps around the track like they were in 2005, the last year of the V10 era. Oh, and Bahrain is allegedly getting a doubleheader, and we're ending the year at Abu Dhabi again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's allegedly going to be the final four rounds, making it, I think, 18 in total. Who would have guessed we would have had 18 races by the time the pandemic started? We're going to have an 18-race calendar in the end, but allegedly the four races to end the year, Istanbul, two in Bahrain, including one on the alleged oval layout, and a race in Abu Dhabi to finish the year, allegedly December 15th. Not final confirmation on that. Bloody hell, the week before Christmas, we're getting a Grand Prix. That is a kind of wild, to say the least.
It's definitely going to throw our end of year awards into the real far back lands.
Right. Yeah, Bar Oval, as the joke's on the Discord. That'll be interesting to keep an eye on. But yeah, final confirmation on that, not confirmed, but very strong. Every motorsport place on the land is reporting it, so it's probably going to be a matter of when. You know when Formula One social media has put out a tweet about Kimi Raikkonen winning in Turkey in 2005? You go, I wonder why they put that in there.
Maybe they just wanted to celebrate all the laps that Kimi Raikkonen's done. He does have the all-time laps completed record.
Yeah. Couple of notes to take away from 254 and our MotoGP recording as well, by the way, just to fill in the blanks before we get out of here. You know how I mentioned it, wouldn't it be funny if they extended the catch fence between turns 2 and 3 in Austria between weekends? Guess what the MotoGP and the Red Bull Ring actually did? Exactly that! They've extended the catch fence up through towards the hairpin, even though it would have done absolutely nothing to prevent Frankie Morbidelli's bike from going back over to turn 3 apex anyway. It's not good. Cal Crutchlow specifically came out and said, don't do that, when talked about it, because he said if somebody goes off on the outside of turn 2, where are they going to end up? Straight in the catch fence. And that's one place you don't want to be, having come off a 190 mile an hour motorcycle. And that's exactly what they've gone and done. Okay, it's, you know, it's going to be a bit of a nervous gut wrencher watching MotoGP this weekend in Styria. We'll have to wait and see what happens where that's concerned. If you want to see it, check out Simon Patterson on Twitter. If you want to see the full work that took place over there, it's about as good or as bad as you'd expect. There's been you got confirmation this morning from the stewards that Johann Zarco will have to face a pit lane start whenever he returns to the sport. It might be this weekend in Styria, it might not be. He's still touch and go. He had to have surgery on his wrist and a broken scalpioid after what happened last week. Johann admitted he's not feeling great. He was declared unfit when he had the medical check on Thursday, as was Afis Syrin, who, bless him, tried to do a medical with crutches. That was charming. I was like, yeah, Afis, probably for the best you sit this one out. Zarco is going to wait till the last minute. He's going to be reassessed tomorrow morning to see if he can race on the Saturday, like we saw with Marquez in Jerez round 2, to see if he can maybe race FP4 and qualifying on Saturday morning. Probably won't. We'll know by the time this goes out. We'll have to wait and see. But whenever he does race properly, most likely Misano, he will have to start a race from pit lane, because the stewards deemed him at fault for the incident between him and Frankie Morbidelli. Allegedly, the stewards' office had unseen angles that we didn't see of TV, and it seems like Zarco cut across Morbidelli through turn 2, and that's what caused their collision. Not good.
It does, you know, that line that they had footage that we didn't have, like, maybe eventually since the decision's been made, you could show us the footage that, you know...
Right?
That changed the steward's mind.
Right, I'd like to see some of that, because the big complaint from the paddock is that, one, this penalty was seemingly made to throw the book at Zarco, and I kind of agree with them, because I've never seen a pit lane penalty given out for anyone for causing a collision or, quote, irresponsible riding. If you look at it just a round ago at Brno, like, Zarco was also deemed to be riding irresponsibly during that incident with Pol Espargaró and was given a long lap penalty. Now, has the nature of the accident prompted the stewards to suddenly up it to a pit lane start? Because that's a much more severe penalty for the incident, and a lot of riders have come out and said, look, say what you will about the incident itself, we're complaining about the inconsistency of penalties given out, and arguably it's even worse given that MotoGP has two of the three same stewards at every Grand Prix we go to, one of them being the legend Freddie Spencer. And yeah, they've complained about inconsistency of penalties. And to be fair, I think they've got a point on that one. MotoGP's always been kind of sloppy ever since they took race direction off the board for administering penalties with Mike Webb. I think he was generally a bit better at handling these issues compared to what we've got now. I know a lot of riders have complained about it since. We'll have to wait and see if there's any further comments on that, because riders aren't happy, apparently, regarding this penalty and the example that's apparently made of Johan. So we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But yeah, there's an update for you. Pit lane start for Johan whenever he decides to come back. That will just about do it from this episode of Motorsport 101. We managed to get in just under an hour on the nose. Go us. I told you we'd keep it relatively brief-ish. Basically, you can find us one more time. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. Facebook.com/Motorsport101. Twitter, @Motorsport_101. And our personal handles are either, you can see in our boxes on screen, or at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. And again, Patreon, if you'd like to back us financially, patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our shows before they go out on an audio standpoint. If you want the video versions on top, join at the $10 level, where you can get that and access to the Supporters Club on Discord, where you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. I'm going to go take a break because we've done 3 of these in 3 days and we're all exhausted.
Enjoy MotoGP. Enjoy the Indy 500.
Yeah, enjoy racing. Dre, you think you're exhausted?
I was going to say, I'm exhausted through jumping up and down in excitement. King's been pulling all the strings on this transition, and I swear to God, my poor PC is going to make him pull his hair out. And he's better off for that than I am. He has to play off beard. I don't. I've been Andre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Ryan King. Thank you very much for watching, and we'll catch you guys very, very soon. Until then, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.